You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show. This is the number one show on iTunes that discusses the financial issues in divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA, certified divorce financial analyst, and author of the book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. Today, we have a very special guest. You will get to hear an interview with one of the top family law attorneys in Texas. She is very impressive. Her name is Amber Shimesh. She is a partner at MAS Law Firm in Dallas, and she is going to teach you some important tips and tricks as you go through divorce. You're going to learn things like how to choose a divorce attorney and why picking the wrong one can cost you dearly, not only during your divorce, but for the rest of your life. You're going to learn things like when to use mediation as a method of divorce, how to determine whether or not you should keep the house, and why no-fault divorce does not automatically mean a 50-50 split in assets, and much, much more. Now, we start this interview talking about some things specific to the state of Texas, but even if you're not in the state of Texas, you should really stick around in this interview. As we get deeper into the interview, there is some great information that's going to help you regardless of where you live. And as importantly, you're going to get inside the head of a top family law attorney. This is a real special treat. And so without further ado, here's the interview with Amber. Today, I'm honored to have Amber Shimesh, an excellent family law attorney in Dallas and partner at MAS Law Firm. She is highly rated by our clients, does excellent work, and we are going to discuss some important topics in divorce relevant to you. But before we get started, Amber, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And can you just tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Richardson, Texas. I'm one of six siblings. My parents had a very nasty divorce, which I think kind of paved the way for me to go to law school. I went to undergrad at UT in Austin and went to New York, actually did advertising for a little bit before deciding to go to law school in Miami, Florida. Graduating law school, I came back to Texas, which is home, and decided that I wanted to do family law and hopefully help some people that are going through divorce process, help them through it, and hopefully cope in a better way than my family went through it.
It seems to be that a lot of people in the profession had that divorce experience that led them to help other people as a profession afterwards. And so when you say that you work in family law, what does that all encompass? It's not just divorce, right?
That's correct. It's not just divorce. So it can include child custody, for example, what's called a suit affecting parent-child relationship. It can include premarital agreements or even postmarital agreements, which are essentially contracts between the parties. It also includes any child support enforcement actions. It includes some temporary restraining orders, protective orders in regards to family violence. So there's a lot more than just divorce, and not to mention adoptions too.
Oh, wow. That's quite a bit. Can you talk a little bit about how Texas handles divorce and the laws in Texas, particularly as they apply to things like dividing property and custody, just at a high level?
Absolutely. So Texas is a community property state. So typically what happens in Texas, if a party files for divorce, the first thing we do usually is get what's called an inventory and appraisement from both parties. And we go through that and figure out what are all the assets and debts. And Texas being a community property state, anything and everything from the date that you guys are married until the date that you're divorced is going to be divided 50-50 unless certain circumstances occur. One of those would be a history of family violence, for example. Another one would be where spousal support would be needed in a case where one party is making significantly more money than the other, or one party has a disability. And those are circumstances where it wouldn't be a 50-50, but typically it's a 50-50 split. Anything that was owned prior to the marriage is separate property.
And in Texas, does the date of separation have an effect, or how does Texas think about that?
So some states have a date of separation where actually the parties can be living apart and they go back to that date that they separated to divide up the assets. Texas, however, does not recognize that. They do look at the date of separation to get some sort of a time frame, but they don't actually go back to that date in terms of dividing up the assets. So for example, people could be married for 8 years, be separated for 7 of the 8 years, but still have to divide up stuff that they currently have in existence.
No, thank you. And how does Texas think about child support and spousal support and determining how much gets paid or how much someone receives?
It's a good question. Child support is based on the Texas child support guidelines that come through the Attorney General of Texas's office. It's typically, it's based on the percentage that you're making and also based on your income. So for example, the more money you make, the more money you're going to have to pay. And the more children you have, the percentage goes up unless you have children with other parents, and then the percentage could decrease. So for example, if I have a client that has one child, he's paying 20% of whatever his net income is. And that means after taxes, of course. And then if he has multiple children, then he's actually going to be paying a little bit more to that parent. Based on the children that he has, it's going to be percentage higher. So for example, 2 children, 25%, 3 children, 30%, 4 children, 35%. If he has children, for example, from another marriage, then it would be a little bit different in terms of the calculations. It would actually be a decrease. So for example, if he has one child with one mother and another child with another, but 2 children total, but one before the court for this particular case, instead of 20%, it would actually be decreased by a little bit. And also in terms of child support, if the parent is paying some health insurance, then there could be a deduction for that as well.
So it's very formulaic, though, it sounds like, in many cases when it comes to child support.
Absolutely. And actually, Texas puts a cap on child support as well. So if you're making above $8,500 a month, then actually there's a cap on your child support. And there are arguments, so it's not an open and shut kind of a case. There are arguments where that can be made where the court could actually increase the child support depending on the needs of the child and depending on the history of the case. So for example, if you have a wealthier family that have been paying, you know, for years and years, private ice hockey lessons for their child, most likely that's going to continue because the court wants to keep stability and repetition for the children.
That's great. And then what about for determining alimony or maintenance payments? How does that get decided?
Spousal support is something that Texas entertains on quite a regular basis. Usually you have to be married for about 10 years or longer prior to even requesting long-term spousal support. Temporary spousal support is something that can be asked during the divorce process to allow that person to hire an attorney to get on his or her feet if the other party makes substantially more and has access to more of the assets and accounts. So for example, you'll see this in a situation where there's a stay-at-home mom and there's a father who's the breadwinner and making the majority of the money in the household income. All of the accounts would be in the father's name, for example, 401k, checking accounts, savings accounts as well. And then we would have some temporary spousal support, even if they weren't married 10 years or longer, given to the wife so that she can support herself during the process of the divorce prior to the division of all the assets.
Oh, that's very interesting. And I want to shift gears just a little bit. Every state has no-fault divorce, but it's interpreted differently depending upon the state. What does that actually mean in Texas? And I know there's some tricks that aren't necessarily obvious to someone who hasn't been divorced before?
That's a good question too. So before Texas became a no-fault, you had to have a reason, enlist the reason to get a divorce. Now Texas has what's called an insupportability and a conflict of personalities with no reasonable expectation of reconciliation, which just basically means you guys can't get along. Before this came into effect, you had to have a reason such as abuse, cruelty, which is still one of the options that Texas offers, but it's not a requirement. Another one is abandonment. Another one is living apart. Another one is a felony conviction, for example. So what I typically do, depending on the facts and circumstances of that particular client's needs, we'll look at what all we can put into the petition. If it is a case where the parties just didn't get along, of course, we're going to put a conflict of interest and the personalities that couldn't get back together. If it's not, and there's a little bit more than just that, we'll have that and we'll add due to cruelty, family violence, due to abuse, which could be physical or emotional as the reasons. And the more reasons you have, remember going back a little bit, we said 50-50 division of assets. The more reasons that you have that are legitimate and you can show evidence to provide that, the more circumstances you're going to get above the 50%. So for example, maybe getting 60% out of the divorce assets as opposed to getting 50%.
Got it. So basically, if there is abuse or something to that effect, you can end up with more assets as part of the split.
Correct.
As an attorney, you don't just litigate every case that comes in. I know you're a mediator as well. Is that right?
That is correct.
And so if someone's listening you know, we've talked about on the show the difference between litigation and mediation and just other options to get divorced. Some people might have to go the do-it-yourself route. But for people who are comparing litigation versus mediation, how do you guide people to determine what's the best option for them?
I usually have the clients come in and meet with me. I offer a free 30-minute consultation and kind of get an idea of what their case is looking like. Most of the time, my cases end up settling before going to court. I recommend anybody and everybody that's in this situation to try to settle with the other side first. If that doesn't happen, then go to court. Mediation is one of the tools that you can use for settlement purposes. Mediation allows both parties typically to be either in the same room or they can be split into separate rooms. And you have a mediator, which is a non-biased third party that comes in and goes into one room and asks them, okay, what are your requests? What are you wanting out of this divorce or this case? And then going into the other room as well and seeing what they want and trying to get somewhere that's a happy medium that is reasonable. If it's beyond the line of reasonable to where I can inform my client, your chances of going to court and getting more than this are higher, then I'm going to tell my client, let's take our chances in court. Otherwise, if it's within a reasonable area, then I usually push for a settlement because you also have to look at the long-term effects of harm emotionally to both parties, especially if they have children involved. You also need to look at the additional costs of court costs and attorney's fees that come into play as well. And you have to look at the cost that changes between everybody, the cost for that person personally to make the decision of whether to continue the case or not in terms of stress and emotional abuse and stuff like that. So sometimes they want to end the case sooner.
And you just mentioned a lot about costs. If someone's thinking about a range of costs for a divorce, what might that range be?
It really depends on all of the assets and debts involved in the case. It depends if they have children. It depends if they're coming and going and traveling on a regular basis, if they are currently domiciled in state. It really needs to take a look at several factors. For example, our uncontested cases, which means that the parties actually reached an agreement, came in, told us what the agreement is, ready to sign it. If they're in the Dallas County area, it's less than $1,000, and that includes the filing fee, the court costs. We usually get the party to sign what's called a waiver, so we don't have to pay for a process server to go and serve them. If it's more than that, and for example, it's a family that has two or three homes, a lot of credit card debt where we're going to need to subpoena different banks, it could end up costing more where we'll ask for a retainer, which is kind of like a deposit down. Usually that retainer is about $3,000 or $4,000, depending on the issues. It could be a little bit more. It could be a little bit less.
That's very good information. And when someone comes into your office for the first time, they call the office. I know your receptionists are extraordinarily busy and they say, I have a new case. What's the process like for someone who's thinking about that?
That's a good question. Usually when they call in, the secretary will transfer them to someone on the family department team that knows what specific questions to be asking. Where do you live? How many children do you have? What kind of a case is it? And just kind of get the basics first. Then they set them up for a free 30-minute consultation where they can actually meet with one of the attorneys here at our office to go way more in detail and figure out what exactly they're going to be needing from the court and to lay out what are the pros and cons of going forward with the case, whether it's worth their while to move forward with the case. I have several clients that come in and have an issue that may not necessarily be appropriate for going to court for. Sometimes a letter can handle the situation to where it can get resolved. Sometimes a phone call. Sometimes it's just a misunderstanding that client didn't understand what was in their previous order. So some matters can be dealt with without actually having to sign up for a case. Other matters, obviously, you know, we need to go forward and either file something with the court or set a mediation or at least start the process specifically in regards to like a divorce case or a custody case.
And are there some common mistakes or common issues that you see people forgetting about or making as they go through the divorce process that you should let people know about just so that it makes the process a little bit better for them or things that might trap them as they go through the process?
Yes, unfortunately, a lot of people make mistakes that they're not even aware that they're making. One is choosing the wrong attorney. I can't tell you how many people have come into my office after the fact saying, well, I got, you know, screwed in my divorce case because I made the mistake and chose the wrong attorney. And there's no going back. Once you usually get a final order, it's very, very difficult to modify that order. especially in regards to assets and debts. In regards to child-related issues, it's a little easier to modify, but not so simple. So first and foremost, do some research. Make sure that you find an attorney that is good for not only for your case, but good for you. An attorney that is explaining things in a way that you understand them. An attorney that is on your level that says, okay, this is the goal I'm going to go after, and that understands what the goal is that you're wanting to achieve. Also do some research. There's a lot of attorneys out there that scam people. And I hate saying that because it gives my profession a bad name. But there's a lot of resources online that you can go to. One of them is Martindale Hubble. They have all of the attorneys you can look for in a specific area. For example, if you're in Dallas County, look at Dallas County. If you're Collin County, look at Collin County. If you're Rockwall County, for example, you're going to want to look there as well. So that's another thing. I would also recommend, a lot of people think when they get served with divorce papers that if they don't respond, it'll just go away. That never happens. It never works. Sadly, it will always come back to bite you. If you don't show up, then what happens usually is the court will put what's called a default judgment into place, which is kind of like a forfeiture. And anything and everything that the opposing party was asking for, usually they get granted because no one was there defending it or arguing against it. So as soon as you get served with something, I would highly recommend, whether me or somebody else, talk to an attorney that knows what they're doing, that's in your area, that could help you.
Yeah, so it's not something that you can just close your eyes and hope it goes away.
No, they never go away.
That's great information for people looking for an attorney. I have one question in a slightly different direction. When people think about splitting property, and especially in a community property state like Texas, what advice do you give for people who want to stay in their home, or should they sell their home, or how do you think about that with your clients?
So generally, when it comes to the home, the first step is I ask them, when was the last time they had an appraisal done on their house? Is there any equity in the house? How much mortgage, if anything, is owed on the house? And some people say, oh, well, I looked online on Zillow, and this is the value of my home. And then they think that the value is equal to the equity, which is not the case. So generally, I'll say if it's been 6 months or longer, then we're going to need to get an updated appraisal. And you want to actually hire someone that has licensure to do that, meaning that they know what they're doing. They're going to come in, they're going to look for foundation issues, they're going to look for roofing issues, and they're going to be able to give us an exact amount that shows the equity of the house. So that's the first step. Figure out what's the equity, if any. Sometimes the houses are underwater and we're left with the negative and it's more of a debt. Either way, that needs to be divided too. So first we get the equity, if there is amount, or the debt amount from the appraisal. The next step is we figure out from the parties of how they want to divide it up. Generally, if they don't reach an agreement, the court will just split it, whether it's 50-50 or 60-40 or however the court decides. And if they do reach an agreement, then the court will say, okay, well, one of the other could either refinance and buy the other one out. Sometimes we have issues with credit. So I would recommend, know your credit. You know, if you don't, you need to start looking on a regular basis and check out your credit score. And also, you know, have an idea of what your house's value would be.
Oh, that's great. For anyone in the Dallas area, what's the best way to contact you?
The best way to contact us would be either by phone or online. Our phone number is 972-789-1664. And our website is dallasarealaw.com. And you can find out more information, not only about our firm and about all of our attorneys, including myself, but you can actually find out information about Texas law and depending on what kind of a case you have.
Thank you very much, Amber.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you all for listening to a very special episode of the Divorce and Your Money Show. It's a rare treat that you get to hear directly from a family law attorney. And for those of you in Dallas thinking about divorce, I highly encourage you to consider speaking with Amber. She is very, very impressive. And in the show notes to this episode is her website and contact information. Again, the website is dallasarealaw.com. And before you go, you should also check out my website. It's divorceandyourmoney.com. I have a full full transcript of the interview there. And while you're on my site, be sure to sign up for the newsletter, which will keep you updated with lots of information every week that will help you as you go through divorce. And there's also some important resources there. You'll see a link to my book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. It's available on Amazon, which will walk you through all the key financial issues that you need to know as you go through divorce. There's helpful checklists and financial information in that book. It's very easy to read. And the second thing I want to make sure you see on the website is you sign up for the one-on-one coaching if you are ready for it. We can cover things like how to determine whether or not you should keep your house in great depth and other information that's specific to your particular case. I help people all over the country. And if you have financial issues that worry you or you need a second opinion as you go through your divorce, please do not hesitate to contact me. And finally, is subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And always please leave a review, which helps other people discover the show. And share it with a friend if you can. If you know someone else who needs this information, it's a great free way to pass along the information that you will need. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA, Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Thank you for listening.